So this is now, today comes the dative case, and so this is another case. So far we have seen the instrumental, the nominative, the accusative, and the genitive, and also the vocative. So we've got three more to go. One is dative, one of them is a dative case. And the word dative, you can understand what the case means by understanding the word dative. Dative is coming from to give, right? Donation. Dat is a kind of Latin word for giving. Yeah? So dative is the case of giving, basically. So dative is always used when somebody gets some kind of advantage. So if you give something to somebody, you say something nice, you inform them. In other words, you do something which somebody has an advantage from, the dative case is used. So for example, if I say, I give to Sangharatana, then Sangharatana will be in the dative case, because you have an advantage. If the person who has the advantage who goes in the dative case, I give to Sangharatana. I inform Nicholas. Nicholas will be in the dative because you are informed, so you have an advantage. And it's also the negative, the reverse side. The dative case is also used for the when you have a disadvantage as well. So, you know, I, for example, I tell off, I don't want to say with anybody here, I tell off dodgy monk goes in dative case, right? Yeah. Not always, so that's the general kind of rule how it works. So.
Can you just say that it's always indirect object?
Yeah, it is an indirect object, but I mean there can be many types of indirect objects. The dative is only one of them, I think. But it is definitely an indirect object, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So this is gift for the Buddha. So Buddha is in the dative.
Yeah, exactly. Gift to the Buddha. So in English, normally the way you translate it, the dative case, it's either with two or four.
Yeah.
Because you give to somebody, mm-hmm. or you do it for them. Mm-hmm. So two and four are the standard translations of the dative. So that is how you normally translate it.
Yeah,
so let's see what he has to say here. Yeah, and also the other important usage also of the dative is that it expresses the purpose. It expresses purpose. So, for example, if you say, I go to the village for alms, the purpose for going to the village is alms, right? So alms will be in the dative case. I go to the village for alms. Purpose for something is done.
What Kikubori says is, or it's indirect object or action.
Right, okay.
Right,
yeah. I think there can be many different types of indirect object, but I think dative is probably one of them.
Yeah.
I must admit, I'm not very strong on the kind of grammatical usage, so I could be wrong on that. But anyway, it doesn't really matter. You don't have to worry so much about whether it's direct or indirect, unless it helps you to sort of understand the structure. Yeah. And also it says that there are a number of verbs which are used with the dative, and typical kind of verbs are the verbs which, you know, have something to do which is advantageous to somebody. When a particular verb talks about something which is advantageous for somebody, for example, you have compassion on them, or you inform them, or all this kind of stuff, then that verb is almost always used together with the dative case. Okay. So the way to recognize the dative, and this is the important one, unfortunately, that the dative normally looks like the genitive case. So the only way you can distinguish them is by context. So usually the asa ending, the double SA, which we have for the genitive ending, is the same as the dative. But the dative also has a special ending, which is the aya ending. You see that little table there on page 67. And the aya ending, that is a specific ending only used for the dative of purpose. So when something is the purpose for why you're doing something, it's the aya ending. So you do it for this reason, right? For is a translation for that one. So pindaya, and it comes up here, in that sentence just below the table there, you have gaman pindaya pavisi. So pavisi is entered, right? Aorist of to enter, so entered. He entered it. And he entered the village. Gamang is the object there. And you have then pindaya. So that aya ending is the purpose for which you enter the village. So you get four alms, or for the purpose of alms, you can say. So he entered the village for the purpose of alms. Okay. Then you have a number of verbs that take the dative, and you have one down there which is calm at the very bottom of the page, which means to please somebody. And that person who gets pleased by what you do, they are in the dative, precisely because they gain an advantage, right? The advantage is that you please them. It can also mean to forgive, and again, the person you forgive is in the dative because they gain an advantage. Then you have patissu here, which means to assent to somebody, also takes the dative, because if you assent to somebody, that person has an advantage, right? Upata, this is the same word as upatak, so this means to like to look after or to render services to, and again, takes the dative for that person. So all of these, you can see all of these verbs that I mentioned on this page, because they relate to something advantageous, that's why they have to take datives. Dad, you have dad here, which is to hold over, and the dative person who is sheltered is in the dative. You have aruch, which is an inform, so again, the person who is informed is in the dative. Whereas, but sometimes you have to be careful, because this doesn't always work. You have amantesi, for example, amant there, which also means like that means more like just to address somebody, so it could be either negative or positive. That does not take the dative. It's just you address somebody in the accusative. Then you have verbs that like kup, which means to get angry at, curse, which is sap, and long for, p, to be clear, paka, visible apparent, patubu, which means to manifest or appear. All of these take the dative case. And not, you can see things like kup and curse, obviously that's a dative of disadvantage, because somebody has a disadvantage rather than advantage. So it's parallel to the dative of advantage. Then you have the adjective pia, which means to be dear to, and again the person who somebody is dear to is in the dative. Takes the dative of the person to whom. I'm not sure which person is that. Yeah, the person who feels the dearness, I think, is the one who is a dative. I think that's the point here. Because he is the one who has the advantage, I suppose. Kind of. Then you have for the sake of, and again, this is expressed by ataya. Remember, ataya, this word atta, can also mean like purpose or something. So then it becomes for the purpose, or for the sake of, because of that. Then you have indeclinable alam, which means sufficient. And that takes the dative, is sufficient for me, for example. Alang me is a dative there. Just like a genitive can be me, so can the dative also be me. So all of these things take the dative. We have the negative participle ababa, which also takes the dative, incapable of something. That's more idiomatic, but that's also a dative apparently. And you have the good wishes, and the good wishes, and the person who is the recipient of the good wish, he is in the dative. And welcome, svagatam, literally means, that's very interesting actually, that word svagatam there, towards the very bottom of the page, actually is a contraction of su, agatam. Su means like good or well, agatam means come as a past participle. It's exactly the same as in English, welcome. That's what it means, welcome, yeah.
Welcome to
well gone. Welcome and well gone, yeah. And then you have the indeclinable safe, and namo also takes the dative. Namo, we have namo tassa bhagavato, right? That tassa bhagavato is all dative, arahato, samma sambuddhasa, because namo takes the dative. So,
tassa was another one, wasn't it? Was the genitive?
It's both. This is the point, this is what I mean. They look exactly the same. They both have the asa ending. So asa ending can either be dative or it can be genitive. And you have to know from the context what it is.
Yeah.
So, but in this case, it actually is a dative. Hail to that blessed one.
Did the early grammarians actually distinguish between dative and genitive? Or is it just Westerners who do
that? No, they certainly do in the Pali. The Pali grammarians distinguish between the two. They have a special name for it. I think it's mentioned here, even it's called the Sampadana case, or the Chaturthi case.
Okay.
They distinguish. All of the grammar in here is based on actually the Pali grammarians. This is directly from the Pali grammarians. Mm-hmm. This is not, I mean, he tries to explain it in Western language, mm-hmm. but it's actually based on the Pali grammarians. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah. Okay. So, I will just skip the next paragraph because I don't think it's really important. It just confuses matters. And it says that it should be borne in mind that the infinitive of verbs overlaps in meaning with the dative of purpose. Infinitive is to do, right?
To go. Rain.
Yeah, but I'm just trying to figure out how it overlaps with the purpose. I run to get fit. I run for the purpose of getting fit.
That's not infinitive.
I run. To get fit, yeah. To get, I run.
To run is the infinitive.
I run
to get run. Oh.
I run to get fit. To get is an infinitive, isn't it? No, in that case. If I say I run to get fit, to get is infinitive, and it's equivalent to the dative of purpose that we said here.
I run to get fit.
I run for the purpose of getting fit.
To get.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm just trying to find out the case, because it says it overlaps with the meaning. I'm trying to figure out the way it actually does that, but it's really irrelevant.
So then would fit be in dative or not? To get fit, would it be accusative?
I run for the purpose of fitness. Purpose of it. Yeah, probably fitness would be that dative, yeah.
Oh, we're still with
yeah. I would say so, yeah.
Even if you use the infinitive, it's still the same.
Oh, no, not with infinitive. With infinitive, it might be different. Yeah. But I'm saying if you use the,
With infinitive. That's what I mean, it says overlap. So.
The point is that infinitive has the same meaning as the dative. Yeah.
But not, okay.
They use alternatively, not together, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Okay, a very important idiomatic construction of the dative. Case refers to the proper time for something, the opportunity for something. Etassa kalo, which means it is the time for this. Kalo is time. Etassa, for this. The time for this. So, for example, sometimes they will say, the Buddha will say something, you know, I could explain this, and then everybody says, oh, this is the time for the Blessed One, and just to say this. Etassa kalo. And then you have akalo yachanaya. And hey, akala means opposite, not the right time for asking, yachanaya, for asking. Again, is the aya ending there for the purpose of asking. And you have a very important expression is yasa dani kalang manyasi, which means literally something like now, you think now the time, for which now you think the time, is literally what it means. It is an idiomatic expression. How does Vicky Boyle translate this one again now? He has quite a nice way of translating this. You may go at your own convenience, I think is how it translates. Or you may come at your own convenience. Because it is an idiomatic expression.
You may do as you may fit.
See fit. That's the old one. That's the old, the old one. It used to be that, please do as you see fit. But I think his new one is, please come or please go at your own convenience. Oh. Yeah, yeah. Hmm. That's what he reckons it actually means, because it is an idiomatic expression. Yeah. Yeah. So the last expression is extremely common in saying goodbye, formally goodbye, that the Buddha would say, for example, to a person, being roughly equivalent to, well, if you really must go. Well, I don't think it means that. If you really must go, it means, you know, well, please go if you want to go. I don't think the Buddha tries to hold people back. It is used by servants reporting to the master, saying that preparations have been completed, etc. You can start whenever you wish, exactly. You may go at your own convenience, precisely. That's exactly what it means. Yeah. Anyway, so that's the dative. And really, all you have to remember from the dative is that if something is the advantage for somebody, it's advantageous for somebody, or disadvantageous for somebody, that person is often in the dative case. That's really all you have to remember. And secondly, about dative of purpose. The purpose for which you do something also is often in the dative. Dative of purpose, dative of advantage, that's usually what it's known as. If you remember that much, then you have really remembered all you need to remember about the dative case. Okay, then we have the aorist of su. So su, this is the verb to hear. And you see the aorist there, so you have a rough idea how it goes. It's always handy. And you can, the plural is actually quite easy to recognize straight away. Those endings that are in the plural are typical aorist endings. The ung, third person, they heard, aso sung, asutta, you plural heard, asungha, we heard. And also the first person singular, aso sing, the ing ending of the typical first person aorist. Okay, now comes something which is important, and this is the relative pronoun, and then afterwards comes the relative clause. And this is a very typical kind of construction in the Pali, using relative clauses and relative pronouns. A relative clause is a clause which begins with a relative pronoun or a relative indeclinable. So that's how you know something is a relative clause, because it has a relative pronoun at the beginning. A clause, you don't ever understand what a clause is? A clause is like a fragment of a sentence which comes first. For example, we had before, we have, having gone to Perth, he shopped trousers, right? Having gone to Perth is the clause. Then he shopped for trousers is the main phrase coming afterwards. It's clause and main phrase. So anything like that, which is like a fragment which comes first, and then the main phrase afterwards, is called a clause. That fragment is called a clause. And you have the main, and the whole thing is like a sentence or a period, sometimes called.
You heard that joke about the clauses, the grammatical analysis of Christmas and the clauses.
Okay.
Santa Claus, Mrs. Claus, and the others with sub clauses.
Sub clauses. Okay. So the typical thing to say in Pali, for example, would be who drinks the water, he was thirsty. Right? In other words, the one who drank the water was thirsty, is in English. But Pali say, who drinks the water, he is thirsty. That's how you construct a sentence in Pali. It's a very typical construction. You've got to get used to that. You've got to get your head around that, because a lot is constructed like that. You have the clause first, which says something of the person, and then you have the main clause afterwards. Anyway, yeah, you hopefully get the hang of it as we go through this. So first of all, you have the pronoun. Now this pronoun, which comes here in this paper on page 70, this is called the yad pronoun. And basically it means who or which, right? Just like I was saying now, who drinks the water, right? Or which car is green? That car is mine. That's another typical Pali way of saying something. Which car is green? That car is mine. In other words, the car that is green is mine, right? So this is the declension here in the table, and you will see that it's exactly the same declension as the pronoun we saw very early on, the so pronoun, so sa, tang, ta pronoun, that we saw in table in chapter 4, I think, or 5. And all of the endings are exactly the same. It's only the initial letter that is different. It's a Y rather than an S or a T. So you see, for example, the nominative here, instead of so, it's yo. So often you have the connection yo so, yo so bhagava arahan, yeah, he who, literally who he, but in English is a he who, yeah,
he who,
yeah,
yo so, yo so,
yeah, basically, yeah. And then you have the feminine is ya, what goes together with sa, and you have yang, which goes together with tongue, right, yad with tad. So all of these are exactly the same as the so, sa, tongue, which is very easy in a sense that it's exactly the same. The endings are exactly the same. It makes it quite easy. You can see here, you have the, at the bottom there, you have the dative and genitive. You remember yassa, we have tassa before. And you have the plural yesang is equivalent to tesang, which you saw before as well. So yesang, if you're going to translate yesang, it means of whom, right? Of whom, or of which, but plural. So yehi means by who, by which. yena, by him, or by that, or by her, yena, yaya, by her. Relative pronouns are used mostly in relative clauses, but some of the case forms are also used as indeclinables. That means that sometimes you find an indeclinable, it looks like a relative pronoun, but it's actually indeclinable, which has a fixed meaning here. Particularly young is famous for that. Young can have a very wide meaning. Okay, so now we get to the relative clause and how to actually this is used. And he says here that the relative clause is a regular form of subordinate clause. That's what I meant by subordinate. Subordinate means that it cannot stand on its own. It only gets its meaning from the rest of the sentence. So, which car is green? That car is mine, right? In other words, the green car is mine. Which car is green? That car is mine. You cannot just say which car is green. You have to actually say something more. Yeah. That's why it's called a subordinate clause. It's used extremely frequent. And it's interesting what it says. It's a clear articulation of the sentence into a subordinate clause introduced by a relative word, which is either the pronouns we just saw, or indeclinable relatives, we see afterwards. And a main clause introduced by a demonstrative word is an outstanding characteristic of Pali. In other words, it's the kind of thing you would normally see. So he says here, you should note here, it says here, in a main clause introduced by a demonstrative word. So in other words, that's a demonstrative pronoun. So again, the way it works is, which car is green? That car is mine. That there is a demonstrative pronoun which relates to the which at the beginning, right? So these two relate to each other. That's basically what it means by the demonstrative word, which builds. That's actually a very important thing to get that right. So you have the relative clause introduced by a relative pronoun, and you have a demonstrative clause, or the main clause, introduced by a demonstrative pronoun afterwards. Which car is green? That car is mine. And then he said you can build up very long and complex sentences using these kind of clauses. And it's actually quite easy because you learn to analyze the sentence stage by stage. Take one clause at a time. Each clause often has its own verb. Take one clause, analyze that one, read that one. Second clause, analyze that one, until eventually you break the sentence up into tiny fragments. You can read the whole thing here. That's the way to go, really. That's why it's very important to always follow the kind of the structure of the sentence, verb by verb, clause by clause, and then you should be able to read it. Okay. Then he says on the next paragraph down there, the relative clause regularly precedes the main clause. So usually it comes in front. Which car is mine? And which car is green? That car is mine, right? It comes first. The relative word introduces the relative clause, but may be preceded by an indeclinable, okay, connecting the whole sentence to the narrative. So let's just say that there might be something additional. So here you go. This is a classical example. Atta ko ye ichinsu te akansu. So here, when you analyze the sentence, analyze it according to the verbs. So you have two verbs, ichinsu and akansu. Start with the first one, ichinsu, and do everything from before that verb, including that verb, before you do anything else. This is the way to always do it, I think. So ichinsu is the aorist of the verb to wish or to desire. And it's the third person plural, right? And then you have the ye, which means who. So the ye here is again the plural, and the ye is actually the agent here. It's the nominative plural of the agent. So who desires? Who desired? And then you have atako, which just means then. So then, who desired? And you have te akansu. Akansu is the aorist of the verb karoti, so it means they did. And the te, he just emphasizes the they. So then, who desired? They did. That's what that sentence means. In other words, those who wished did or worked or whatever. But translated this word for word is probably easier. So then, who desired, they did. Remember when I say who desired, it's not a question. It's not a question, right? It's an indeclinable, it's a clause. It isn't about who desired, it's not what is it. The whole point is that who desired, they did. I'm not talking about a question here. It's a relative clause coming first. In other words, those who desired, they did. That's what it actually means. And then he says the relative pronoun must be in the same number and gender as the noun or demonstrative pronoun it refers to, but it may be in any case connecting it with the words of its own relative clause or sentence. So to see what's going on here, consider the following one. Yena dvarena nikami tan gotama dvaran nama ahosi. So again, you have two verbs here. You have nikami and you have ahosi. So stop first with nikami. Nikami means to exit. It's an aorist, so it means he exited or he left. Nikami, third person. And there is no agent apart from the verb. There's no nominative in there. And it's an active sentence. But then you have this instrumental there. So this is the instrument by which he left. So yena must agree with dvarena because they have both an instrumental singular. So that dvara means door and ye means which. This means which door, and it's all in the instrumental, so it becomes a by which door. So this comes to mean by which door he left. By which door he left. Right? That's the first part. And then you have tan gotama dvara nama ahosi. So ahosi, the verb to be, so this is an equational sentence. And you have tan gotama dvara, so this is all in the nominative. So that was called the Gotama gate, Gotama door, dvara. That, you have, it's an equational sentence, you have the ahosi, was, that was, nama called the Gotama gate.
I can't remember, was tongue and
ahosi, you know, to the... Ahosi is the aorist of the verb hoti, to be, so it means was.
And tongue?
Tongue is that or it, or, you know, that or it. It's the pronoun, it's just the demonstrative pronoun, usually. Tongue, Gotama dvara. So here it means that was the Gotama gate. Yeah. That was called the Gotama gate. Yeah.
And with all that, those things that have to kind of agree with each other, you also always just go by clause. Everything has to agree there,
yeah.
And kind of go over the clauses.
No, it has to agree within the clause. But there also has to be agreement between the clauses. That's what he's saying here. So the agreement, first of all, they have to agree within its own, it has fully, the meaning first and foremost has to agree within its own clause.
Yes.
But then there's also agreement between clauses as well.
But just in terms of like number and gender.
Yeah, precisely.
Right.
No, precisely, yeah.
And just when I was doing the homework, it's always kind of the verb which starts it off, is that correct? The agreement process, because sometimes the noun also kind of has something to say, and
it depends.
I'm a bit confused.
It depends on if you use participles, the nouns have something to say because the participles agree with the nouns.
Ah.
But if you if it's not the participle, then it's much easier to start with the verb.
Right.
Yeah, and there's no participles here. It's all ordinary verbs.
Yes.
They're called finite verbs, and these particular verbs and participles are called infinite verbs. Often. Yo.
Question: is tongue good? Is that nominative?
Nominative, yes.
It's nominative.
It has to be because of the verb to be.
So
yeah.
It's neuter?
Yeah. It's a neuter noun.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
I thought it was.
Yeah. That's precisely right. Yeah.
It has to be that, you know, it was tan ahosi.
Yeah.
Could it be tan ahosi kotamabara nama?
Well, yeah. I mean, it doesn't matter. The sequence doesn't matter. It's just that Pali, the verb is usually at the end. As a kind of standard thing. But the sequence is irrelevant. So when you say it in English, you just change the words around, you know?
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter in English.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was called. Basically, it's an equational sentence equating the two nominatives, that and Gotama Dvara. That was the Gotama gate. And then you have nama in there, which is called.
Mm-hmm.
So nama usually goes with the word in front of it. That's why that was called the Gotama gate. And the point here is that yena and tanya agree with each other in gender and in number. And you see that they both gender, they have the same gender. The gender here is neuter, and number is singular. Right? So neuter and neuter is the same, and the singular is the same. But the case is different. One is instrumental, the other one is nominative. And that is often how it is. So that is the agreement between the clauses. by which gate, it makes very good sense to think about it, by which gate he left, that gate was called the Gautama Gate. I mean, you know, you couldn't have a different number. You couldn't say by which gate he left, those were called the Gautama Gates. It doesn't make any sense, right? It has to agree here. By the gate he left, that was called the Gautama Gate. You can't say by which gate he left, they were called. So it makes very good sense that numbers should agree with each other. So when you think about it like that, it's pretty obvious, actually. Yeah. And the same thing with the gender as well. Okay. And then he says here that beside the demonstrative, other pronouns may serve as a correlative. Remember the correlative here? This is the same as what he called the demonstrative before. That is the word which is at the beginning, usually, of the main clause, right? So you have the relative word first at the beginning of the relative clause, and then you have the demonstrative or the correlative at the beginning of the demonstrative of the main clause. This is what you see here. You have ye ahesung sabbe bakesi. Ye ahesung. Ahesung again is an aorist meaning they were, is verb to be. So this literally means, and then you have ye here, which is like the agent. It's not really an agent because of the verb to be, but it's the which is the nominative here. So who were, or if you like, those who were. In English, you would say those who were, but in Pali, just who were. Who were sabbe bakesi. Bakesi is to devour or to eat. So he devoured, and sabbe is here in the accusative. So he devoured all. Who were, he devoured all. He devoured all. In other words, those who were present or whatever, right? That's what it means. He devoured all of them. That's the implied meaning here. So literally, who were, he devoured all. And the point here is that ye and sabbe agree with each other in number, they're both plural, and also agree in here in gender, they're both nominative. And as far as the case goes, it's difference in case, because ye is nominative, whereas sabbe is actually accusative. So the case is different. It's not easy for you to see this thing that I'm saying now. I'm saying this thing because I know what's going on, but it's not easy for you to see this. But this is just to give you some idea what's happening here. Then it goes on about sometimes the main clause has no correlative word, blah, 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 etc., etc. And then he has a point which is a little bit interesting here on the second paragraph. And this is the repetition, your. And when you have a repeated pronoun like that, it becomes universalized. It becomes instead of who, it becomes whoever. And any noun like that, any word, whatever, can be repeated like that and become universalized like that. So you have here, for example, the example here is yo-yo adiyisati tasa-tasa anupadasami. So here you have adiyisati is from the verb to take, it's a plural, so it means will take. And then you have yo-yo is the agent, because that's the nominative there. So whoever will take. And then you have anupadasami, which means like to give or to grant. So I will, again, a future, I will grant. And then tassa becomes to him. So whoever will take, to him ever, I will grant, quite literally in Pali.
So that's any of these, you said, it's
tasa-tasa because you have yo-yo in the beginning.
Yeah.
The pronoun which correlates to that one, the demonstrative which correlates to the yo-yo, also becomes doubled up. It also becomes universalized.
Wow.
So in English you wouldn't say that. In English you just say whoever will take, you just say to him I will grant. In Pali it's literally whoever will take, to him ever, you know, universalize it, him ever. I will grant. It's like a universalization of him. I mean, that's a very, very, very awkward way of speaking English, but you know, I'm just trying to universalize it. However you would do that in English, I'm not sure how you would do that. Whoever, to. Yeah. Anyway. Okay.
Are there any of these like yang? Can you say yang or yang?
Yeah.
Can you?
Yeah.
Yes and yes, of whom?
Sure, yeah, yeah. Of whom would mean of whomever. Of whoever would mean. Yes and yes, yeah. Yena, yena would mean by whoever, yeah. Because it's instrumental.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah. That's how it works. It universalizes the sentence. Yep. Okay. Then you have your soul, which means that which he mentions there. Yeah. And then you have an example here of a sentence. You have your soul sato patamang upapanno tassa evangoti ahang asmi brahma. So here you have the first part of the sentence, which really ends in upapanno. It gives a very handy comma there, which makes it easy to see. There's no such comma in the actual text, but he gives it. So if you stop after upapanno, which means reborn, right? Upapanno is a past participle, means reborn. Obviously there's no agent here, because there's no kind of instrumental with this kind of past participle, because you don't get reborn by anybody, you just get reborn. So it's just in direct agreement with the patient, if you like, the one who gets reborn, and that is tatto here. So you have your soul, that being which, your soul sato, that being which. That's what it means. So that being, or he, no, that being who, or that being which. Look at the kangaroo over there.
Are you using the song?
I don't know.
Is he,
I was
sticking around on this side
before. Is he eating the potted plants or whatever? Oh well. Okay. Okay. So your soul sato patamangpana means upapanno agrees with your soul sato, so you have that being which was reborn, right? Patamang is first, it's declinable here, means first. That being who was reborn first, that's the first part here. They all agree with each other, that being who was reborn first. Tassa evang hoti. So hoti, this is like the standard clause for thinking. I don't know if you remember from the last chapter. And this is the standard idiom for thinking. It literally means he thought thus. Tassa evang hoti, of him it was thus. So the being who was reborn first, he thought thus. Aham asmi brahma. I am Brahma, right? Aham asmi, I am Brahma. Just an equational sentence, straightforward. I am Brahma. Well, it looks easy, but it's not. There's a bit of idioms there, and idioms makes it complicated, because you have to actually understand what's going on here. So yeah. It's there exactly. Yeah, precisely. Yeah. Okay. Then we have some relative indeclinables, and these are just indeclinable words. Which can also be at the beginning of an indeclinable clause. So these are any kind of indeclinable words. And you have words like yata, which means where, yata, which means as, yada, when, yadi, if, yato, because, since. And all of these can be indeclinables, and they can be stand at the beginning of indeclinable of relative clauses, indeclinable relatives. Yeah, and particularly the nominative accusative singular, young, which I saw before, which is either nominative or accusative, can be used very broadly, cover a large range of meanings. It literally means which, but it can mean all kinds of stuff, basically. An example here is, hoti ko so samayo yang ayang loko vivatati. So you first of all have hoti ko so samayo, the first part of the sentence, and the yang is the last part. Hoti ko so samayo means there is that time, right? Hoti was there is that time, that it actually means that there is that time. Hoti kosu samyo. There is that time. Yang ayang loko vivatati. Vivatati means to evolve, and yang he simply means something like that. It's a very general meaning that. So there is that time that ayang loko, this world, evolves. That's what that means. So yang has this very kind of open meaning. You would normally translate it as which, but here that is actually the appropriate one. Because in English also, that and which is very, very kind of interchangeable these days. So there isn't very, often very clear distinction between the two. There is that time that the world evolves.
What do you mean by evolving?
It means like in the suttas you have this idea of the world evolving, and like evolving in one way and then it dissolves afterwards. So sometimes it's translated as the expansion and contraction of the universe. That's a kind of usual one. But whether that actually is what is meant is not clear from the suttas. It just talks about the world evolving and then kind of the opposite afterwards.
Okay. Yeah. Bang and a big crunch.
That's what Adam Brown would normally take it to be, yeah. Yeah. Okay, then you have, on top of page 73, you have yang frequently appears after the expression ta nang etang vinsati. Ta nang etang vinsati means, we saw this before, it means this case is found, vinsati to be found. Ta nang is a case and etang is this, so this case is found. In other words, this is possible. And then you have yang, which comes afterwards, is in other words, this is possible, that, right? For it is possible, that. Then you have yang, which is similar to yang, which also is used very broadly. You have important constructions, yadidang, which means that which, that is, i.e., for example, such as to wit. That's what yadidang means. So that's quite an important construction as well. Has a kind of a little bit of idiomatic sense to it. We have instrumental yena, which we have seen before. And you have here some examples. Here is yena yena gachati, which we just mentioned before. But here it is actually used in the sense of an indeclinable. So here it actually means wherever he goes. So it doesn't actually have the instrumental sense here. It actually means wherever he goes. Just like you have in the upasamkamati, which means where he goes. You know, yena gamo tena upasamkami, towards the village. There he goes. In a sense, this is like the universalization of that towards. That's why it means wherever he goes. Yena gamo tena upasankami, towards the village. There he approached. Aorist. Okay, then we have the interrogative pronoun coming up next. And you will see this is exactly the same as the relative pronoun. This table there is exactly the same as the table you saw on page 70. Except you have a K rather than a Y. And the meaning is who, which, what. So it's even the meaning is exactly the same, except that this time it's interrogative. Who did that? You would say ko instead of ye. And if it was who did this, he was mad, then it's the relative, who. But if it's who did this, then it's ko using instead. So those are the two. So that is the interrogative pronoun. And then it says there is no equivalent to the question mark in the Pali language. And because of that, you have interrogative pronouns, and they kind of make it into a question. As a general rule, if a sentence contains an interrogative word, the whole sentence is interrogative. So you have to look out for those interrogative words. But a few interrogative sentences contain no interrogative word, and it must be understood from context that it is actually interrogative. And sometimes inversion is used. Kamati te idanya. The kamati comes first rather than last, and that means it's actually interrogative. Kamati te idan. Kamati is a verb which does displease you, and this is a word which takes dative, so that's why you is in the dative here. So is this pleasing to you? And then you have idan. This is this pleasing to you? Does this please you? Idan me kamati. And now this is the non-interrogative, this is the affirmation. This does please me. And you see now the verb is at the end. Kamati, it pleases. It is pleasing to me. Me idan. Pleasing to me. This is pleasing to me. This pleases me. And then you have the neuter singular king. King here. King is the neuter singular, and that is sometimes used as an indeclinable, simply making the sentence interrogative. King sadvanga sosi. Did you hear the sound? It doesn't mean which sound did you hear. It actually means did you hear a sound. That is confusing because it looks like that might be king agreeing with sadang, and if it does, then the meaning would be which sound did you hear? You heard which sound, right? Asosi heard, second person singular, eris, you heard, And King Saddang is in the accusative. That's what you would be hearing. So you heard which sound? Which sound did you hear? Actually, that is not what it means. It actually means, did you hear a sound? So that can be a bit confusing. And again, you have to use the context to figure that out. Okay, so there we are. So now we come down to the very last paragraph here, pronominal adjectives. Certain pronouns are sometimes called pronominal adjectives, and they must be carefully distinguished from adjectives on account of the difference in inflection in the nominative and genitive dative plural masculine. And these are the whole list down here. You have anya, anyatara, appara, para, sabba. So, and the difference here is that, and you will see here, you have, for example, at the very bottom there, you have sabbesang. Oh, I'm getting confused. Sabbesang, you normally, if it was an adjective, that should be sabbasang, right? But it has the E in there instead. That E inflection is the same as the inflection of ye. So it is like a hybrid inflection, partly inflected, like an adjective and partly like a pronoun. But you don't have to worry too much about that. It's just it makes it a little bit more complicated.
Sorry, sabbesang.
Yeah.
Is that what you
call it? Genitive plural. Or dative plural, yeah. Of all or to all.
Okay. Sorry, I thought it was an elision together.
No, there's no elision there.
Okay.
No. Right. Yeah.
All something.
Yeah. And all of these are a bit like that. Okay, so I won't worry about the vocabulary, because the vocabulary you can read up yourself. I will go back to the exercises now in the previous chapter. So go through those relatively quickly. So, page 66, and we have translated into Pali. The universe is infinite, or I would say the universe is boundless, is better. So this is an equational sentence. So normally you often don't have a verb in the equational sentence in Pali. The universe here is loko. I should say, because it is equational with the verb to be, everything would be nominative, right, in the sentence. So you have universe loko, and then infinite would be ananto, boundless. Loko ananto, or ananto loko, with no verb to be in there. This is not easy. Another equational sentence. This is not easy. So again, another equational sentence equating this and not easy. Both should be nominative, and not easy. Easy here is probably sukaran, easy to do, sukaran. And then it's an impersonal statement. He says this, so it's neuter, so sukaran, and then this would then be idang normally. So idang, na idang sukaran, something like that.
Oh, so it's not. You can't say
netang sukaran. Netang sukaran. Yeah, you could. But usually idang is the one that is used when you say this, usually. But that's close enough. Yeah. What is actually the exercise has the
idang sukaran.
Okay, yeah. I followed the road. So the verb to follow here is probably patipanjati. So the past participle is probably what is used, is patipanno. So patipanno, and the thing here is I followed, so I and patipanno will actually agree with each other. So it would be ahang patipanno. No, this is not right. This something is very wrong here. I think maybe it's just an ordinary verb here, is it? Patipaji probably. Yeah. So patipajing, yeah, that's probably what it is. It's an ordinary aorist.
Yeah.
So it's ahang patipajing, I followed, so I is the agent. So ahang patipajing, and then the road is maggang in the accusative. Ahang maggang patipajing. Yeah.
Or agamasing.
Agamasing. I went the road. Okay. Yeah.
Sorry, what was the, you know, with the pati parching, that's a dot underneath the T. What was the, again, the dot underneath the T?
It's a retroflex. Pati parching. Pati parching. Just different, slightly different pronunciation.
Yep.
Pati parching. You heard the, when Daniel was doing the chanting yesterday, he pronounced all the M's with dots under it as M rather than N. Do you hear that? Dham, he was saying Dhammam. Dhammam. Sangam. And it's very hard to say. It's much easier to say Dhammam than to say Dhammam. So he was struggling. He was struggling when he tried to say that. So that's just one of the advantages of learning a bit of Pali. It becomes easier. Yeah. Okay. The king saw the boy, and that's pretty straightforward. So the king is Raja, is the nominative, he's the agent, and he's the one who saw. So saw is Adasan, right? The aorist of the sea. And he saw the boy, so the boy is maybe Kumaran. So that would be accusative. So Raja Kumaran Adasan.
So it's not Rajan.
No, Raja is the nominative.
This has,
you can use the table, Peter.
Yeah.
The table actually has it. I'll show you how to use it for Raja.
Says Adasa.
Adasa. Oh, of course, because Adasang is first person, so Adasa is correct. Yeah, Adasang is Adasang would be first person singular. So Raja is third person singular.
That's really helpful to translate.
Yeah. So if you look at this table here, you have to know that Raja is an an noun, right? So you go across the very top line there until you get to an. An is the sixth column from the end. See the AN there? Gee, my eyesight is getting worse. I need some glasses. AN, and then you look at the very first, go down to the very first square, and that's the nominative singular, long A, Raja. That's how I figure it out.
Raja.
So it's an AN now, so it's Raja. Yeah. So you know it's a Raj. So that's how we use those tables. So Raja Kumarang Adasa. The city was prosperous. Equational sentence again. But remember that when you have an equational sentence, you can take out the verb to be. You don't need it there, except if it's aorist. If it is not, whenever it is not present tense, you have to put the verb in after all, because you have to express the tense, right? Otherwise you don't know the tense. So you have to put ahosi in there in this case, even though it is an equational sentence. And then the city is maybe nagarang, possibly.
Yeah.
And then prosperous is probably something like idda, is that right? Ido? Pita. Pito. Pito, yeah. In Pali, PH is P. Aspirated P, yeah. Yeah. Aspirated P. Pito. So, nagarang. Pitang probably. Nagarang, pitang, ahosi.
In the equation of the sentences, either it has to be both in the nominative or both in the accusative.
It can actually be anything, yeah. But you, if you have
it. Because I just put nagaro, pito. But.
It depends. No, it depends.
What's wrong with it?
It depends. Like, I think nagarang is a neuter noun. Isn't it? Am I wrong here?
Yes,
I could be wrong. If it is a neuter noun, then the nominative will also be nagarang, right? It's a neuter noun.
But otherwise,
it's almost always nominative. Nominative is what it is there.
Right.
Also, except if it's part of a longer sentence and it becomes like a clause which has to be in the accusative. For example, if you say he declares. Time is the cause, like we had in the very beginning of the book. Yeah. Then he declares that he is actually in the nominative, because it's he declaring, and time is the cause would be in the accusative, and both would be an accusative, both time and cause, because it's is there, it's an equational, but the whole clause is, or the whole clause is the patient of the sentence. Yeah. So that's how it becomes accusative. Yeah. Okay. So he is fixed, permanent, eternal. So again, this is an equational sentence. We can just forget about the verb to be. And he here, so everything is nominative. So he is probably so. Fixed would be duvo, permanent would probably be nicho, eternal would be sasato. So, so, do go nicho sasato, one of those wrong views.
And they all end in O, but if one of those words would have been like, say, an A verb, it would end differently.
If
but
the,
it would still be in the same case.
If the main noun was in a different gender, so if it was, for example, she, if it was she rather than he, then it would be sa, and it would be duva, nicha, sasata. So it all depends on the... Here the pronoun at the beginning is the main indicator of what the rest is. Or it is, same thing again. Yeah. He saw the fortunate one. It's very straightforward. We saw. So saw is again, is the aorist here, and that would be, we saw us. Adas, I don't know, what is it? Right here, Adasama, yeah. So Adasama, we saw, and then you have we, probably Mayang, nominative, plural, Mayang Adasama, and the fortunate one is Bhagavantan, the accusative. Mayang Bhagavantan Adasama. The speech is agreeable, again, another equational sentence, you can drop out, leave out the verb to be. And the speech here probably is vacha, and agreeable probably is maybe kanta, probably. So vacha kanta, kanta vacha kanta. What is that right, or is it? Yeah.
You also have the other one, basitang.
Basitang is, you can say basitang as well, yeah. In that case, it would be kantang, basitang kantang. Yeah, have to agree
with that. You don't make difference between there someone's giving a speech or somebody's just talking.
Not really. I think if somebody gives like a speech, it would be more like teaching. I think we call teaching maybe. Huh? So you teach somebody. Huh? So yeah, like a Buddha giving a talk or something. Dhamma katang, literally Dhamma talk. Yeah.
Dhamma desana.
Yeah. My life was given by him. His life was given by me. Okay, so my life was given by him. That's the first, just do it phrase by phrase here. So given here presumably is the past participle, means dinna is the past participle. And because it's past participle, you can expect an agent in the instrumental. And that agent here is by him, right? In the instrumental. So that would be tena. So you have dinna, tena. And what is given here is life. The life is given. So life is jiva, probably jivitang. Yeah. So now, what is given, jivitang, that's like the patient here. So remember, the past participle has to agree with that patient. So jivitang and dinnang becomes dinnang then, dinnang ending. And then you have my life, the my is here a genitive, which has to agree with life. It's my life, is the owner of the life. So it's my life. So my is me. Or it's mayhang, depending on the structure of the sentence. So you have something like mayhang jivitang tena dinnang, something like that. Mayhang jivitang tena dinnang. Mayhang, my, jivitang, life, by him, tena dinnang, given. Mayhang jivitang tena dinnang.
What is the child in there?
Cha?
In the key, there is a cha.
Okay, well, presumably because my life was given by him and his life was given by me. So it doesn't actually have that in here. Yeah. And you have his life was given by me. This is exactly the reciprocal. So again, you have given is again dinna because you have life, jivitang again. And by me, this time is maya. It's either maya or me. And then his life, his becomes tassa. So tassa jivitang and maiha dinang. Or something like that. It could very well be quite different in the actual key, but that is roughly what it would look like.
And by me or by him, we have maya and me, but what, the tena?
That's by him, right? That would be the first clause here, the tena. Second clause, by me, is
but
maya or meha.
Where would I find that? Because it's just like maya and
okay, take it up.
Yes,
and you go into this table. And we are now talking about personal pronouns. So you are on the second half of the page towards the bottom. Yeah, on the side, Peter, on the page. And the second half of the page, so on the right hand side, on the bottom half on the right hand side, you see the heading personal pronouns. Can you see that?
Yes.
Yeah? And now you look at the first group there, this is the I, this the singular first person I. You have Ahang, Mang, Maya. You see all that? Ahang, Mang, Maya. And Maya is by me here. And then you have me across there.
You or by you.
This is by me?
Yes.
Both of them are by me here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. So all of this is the first person. All this is the first person. It says first person then on the side. So Ahang is I, Mang is me, Maya and me is by me. And then you have an ablative there with also Maya, which means from me. And you have genitive and dative with Mama or Maihang, or all those possibilities of me, which means of me or for me. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's how it works.
And it's
also locative, Mai.
Locative means some in me or on me or with reference to me. That's what locative is. But don't worry about that yet, because it's just too, it's coming up in chapter 16.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, yeah. Otherwise you get too much.
It's only Maya because it comes first. If it were later, you would use me. Right?
Usually, yeah. Second word usually me, yeah. So it depends on how you construct the sentence. Yeah.
But if Tina now is third person, though.
Yeah, exactly. So it goes further down the table.
By him. Okay.
By him, yeah. Yeah.
Instrumental Tina. Oh,
yeah.
Oh.
So everything is there in this beautiful table made by Winamina Fusika. Very, very handy. And then you have the second last one here. See, Ananda, they are past, ended, changed. So see here is obviously imperative. Buddha is saying to Ananda, see. So that would be passa, see. No ending of the verb. It's passa.
Couldn't find that.
You can find
passa.
That?
I couldn't figure out how to find it or construct it.
Well, how you construct it is you take the verb to see, passati, which is passati, and then you look up the... how to construct the imperative. So if you go to page 34 of your book. Yeah, imperative.
No.
So you have a little table on page 34, the bottom there. So the verb is passati. Remember that this has to be second person singular, right? Because he's speaking to Ananda.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like you, see? And with the word babati, it's just baba. So you take off the ti at the end, just baba. So because of that, it's do the same thing with pasati and become tassa. See. That's how you do it. Yeah. So see, and Ananda is evocative, is a short A. See Ananda. They are past, and they change. So they, so are again, take out the verb to be, and it becomes just they are, so all in nominative, and they here is probably te, they are. Past is atita, ended, maybe niroda, changed viparinama or something like that. So passa ananda te atita long a atita niroda viparinama. Something like that.
Niruddha.
Oh, sorry. Okay, yeah, it's niruddha, it's the past participle. Yeah, that's my fault. It's because it should be past participle there. Niruddha. Te atita niruddha Viparinata, is that right? Viparinata? Viparinata. Viparinata, yeah.
And they're all with long A?
Yeah.
They agree with?
They agree with they, te. It's a plural. Yeah. Plural, masculine plural ending.
Ah, yes, it's not
feminine. Right?
Not
feminine, no.
It's interesting in Pasta is also translated as contact.
No, that's a different word.
That's
PH. A completely different word.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Sorry, okay.
Yeah. Nothing to do with this pasta. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Very last one. He has much gold. Okay, so this here you have to be smart to figure this one out, because the verb has here is not actually expressed by a verb in Pali. It is expressed by the genitive case. Mm. So he has is actually tassa, literally of him. And then you can add the verb to be if you like. So he has, and then much gold is just in the nominative because it's just the main part of the sentence here. So much gold is pahuta, pahuto suvanna or pahuta suvanna? Is it singular or plural? Probably plural. Pahuta suvanna.
Suvanang.
Suvanang is it? Pahutang suvanna. Okay. Yeah, so he has much gold, yeah. I wasn't sure whether it was plural or singular, but singular. So tassa pahutan suvannan koti, probably I'd prefer koti at the end.
And if I put a so, it's just kind of making more clear that he has it, but I don't need it.
No, tassa. That's the whole point. Tassa. Of him, right? It's the whole point. The genitive.
There we go.
Yeah. That's what he had. He had is translated as tassa.
Yeah.
The he is included in tassa.
Yes.
Yeah. Of him there is much gold, but literally. Of him there is much gold.
And the gold is singular, you say?
It is singular, yeah. Like in English, sometimes in English it can be like a...
Right.
What is it called?
Collective
singular, yeah. Precisely. Like people, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Collective singular, yeah. Okay, that's a pretty heavy going.
Yeah.
So, yeah. There's a massive exercise as well. Yeah.
Oh, yes. So many things to do.
It's all happening. We can wait longer. We should do that. Mm-hmm.